sports fans of all ages, faces, and places from every stadium, arena, and auditorium all over the world. May I have your attention, please?
A time's coming when we're going to have to ante up. Ante up and kick in like men.
Like men!
It is now time to bring to your listening ears, hearts, and minds a sports podcast named Wendell's World in Sports with the one and only Wendell Wallace.
Tell him how you feel.
A podcast that gives you strong, passionate, unapologetic, uncompromised thoughts and opinions about the everyday happenings in the NFL.
Mahomes looking to flip, takes it in. Touchdown.
And college football to the NBA in my Georgetown Hoyas.
Giannis fires one down at an exclamation point for Milwaukee.
To any other sporting news of the day. And now, introducing the man whose love of sports was born and bred on the greatest Muhammad Ali, Lynn Bias, Magic Johnson, Bernard King, and Eric Dickerson, Wendell Wallace.
Good morning, good evening, bonjour, bonsoir, que passa, shalom, wassalamu alaikum, konnichiwa, namaste. Welcome to Wendell's World of Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. A lot of great things to get down on and discuss today in the world of sports. What's up, man? How you doing? You doing all right? Good, 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 good. Hey, by the way, you doing everything that you need to do before I go ahead and I start speaking about Russell Wilson, and before I start speaking about the importance of the NFL Combine, before I start speaking about the mock draft, before in the segment number two I start speaking about the NBA, before in segment number three I start speaking about my Georgetown Hoyas, before I get into all of that, I've got to ask you again, man, what's happening? You doing all right? You doing everything that you need to do to make this world, to make your community, to make your neighborhood, to make your household, to make your block, to make your city, to make your state, to make your region, to make everything that's around you a better place to be? How are you doing that? You're doing that by finding someone of a different race, of a different religion, of a different political background, of a different gender, other side of the tracks, and you're learning from that person. You're listening, you're learning when they're teaching, when they're giving you their experiences, you're shutting up. And you're listening, so you can take that education, you can take that intelligence, you can take that knowledge and pass it on. Because what this world needs today is no more division. Religion divides us. Who you love, divide us. Who you identify as, divide us. How much money you have, divide us. What side of the tracks are you on, divide us. Who you worship as a god, divide us. Who you love as a human being, divide us. There's so many things that divide us that we just need to be focusing on. How good of a person are you? Are you filled with empathy and sympathy and compassion and understanding and respect and love and unity for everybody as long as they're willing to accept it and as long as they're willing to give it back? That's all that I care about, man. I don't give a damn who you are. I don't give a damn who you identify as a human being. I don't give a damn what race you're from. I don't give a damn what God you worship. I don't give a damn if you worship a God at all. I don't give a damn what religion you're in. I don't give a damn how many cars you have in your household. I don't give a damn about how big is your house. I don't give a damn about your bank account. I don't give a damn what your first language is. I don't care. I don't care at all. As long as you're down with me in terms of love and peace and unity and getting together and getting along and loving each other with respect and unity and honor, all that stuff, that's what I care about. Everything else, leave behind. So there you go. And also, always got to say this. Wendell's World of Sports. I don't know if you're listening to this podcast on iHeart or iTunes or Spotify or Amazon, but wherever you are, do me a favor. If you could download, subscribe, rate, review, most importantly, though, enjoy the most unique, entertaining, thought-provoking sports talk podcast. If you could do that, Wendell Wallace Jr. would be the happiest human being walking the face of the earth. Ain't no lie. So let's go ahead and let's get into some sports because I know that I want to speak right off the bat about Russell Wilson, the formality, which was him being released by the Denver Broncos. The relationship between him and Sean Payton didn't work. So the working relationship between Sean Payton and Russell Wilson didn't work. So the era in Denver for Russell Wilson is over. The Denver Broncos have informed the 9-time Pro Bowl quarterback that they plan to release him. But Coach Sean Payton and General Manager George Patton said in a joint statement, it read, "We spoke with Russell Wilson Monday to inform him of his release after the start of the league year, which is March 13th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On behalf of the Broncos, We want to thank Russell for his contributions and dedication to our team and community, while wishing him the best as he continues his career. Stop. Don't you hate it when someone either fires you or lets you go that they wish you the best? You know what would be the best? The best would be if you still had me employed. That would be the best. But wishing me the best while we fired you? Now, I know Russell Wilson's going to be paid $39 million, though wishing him the best, he got his wishes. He's going to get paid $39 million before taxes. So, yeah, but when you get fired, I love when people say, hey, you know what? We wish you the best. We wish we didn't have to do this, but there's the door. Get out. But I continue. The statement continues to read, as we move forward, we are focused on building the strongest team possible for the 2024 season and beyond. We are excited to improve this offseason and will have the flexibility to get better through the draft and free agency. The Broncos went 11-19 in Wilson's starts over two seasons and failed to make the playoffs. Peyton benched him with two games remaining in 2023. Now, if you forgot, let me remind you, the Broncos signed Wilson to a five-year, $242.6 million deal after his arrival, and the team will take an $85 million hit in dead money over the next two seasons because of his release, which basically means that this is one of the worst trades in NFL history. So where Peyton is sitting up there and Peyton and Patton are sitting up there talking about, releasing this guy will give us the flexibility to get better through the draft and free agency. I don't know how you're going to do that. Now, I'm not a taxologist, or I'm not, a GM, or I'm not any of this stuff. I don't know how the salary cap works in terms of what you can do, what you can maneuver and all that kind of stuff. But having a guy that you're going to be paying $39 million not to be on your team and incur an $85 million tax hit or, a hit like that, I don't know how you're going to improve your team. I think Sean Payton is, I'm improving my team because I'm getting rid of Russell Wilson. I don't have to deal with Russell Wilson. I don't have to deal with the drama of Russell Wilson. I don't have to deal with everything surrounding Russell Wilson. So that's the thing in terms of Sean Payton. I don't have to worry about that motherfucker anymore. So I think that's basically what Sean Payton is saying in that regard. So the question is going to be, and I'm going to ask you, where's Russell Wilson going to end up? What do you think? What do you think is going to happen to him? How much juice does he have left to squeeze out of his career? Now, he's still talking about, Wilson is still talking about, I'm still the guy and I can still do this and I still want to win Super Bowls. My passion is higher than ever and, everything's looking rosy and the glass is not only half full, but it's falling, it's flowing over with excitement and positivity. And you know how Russell Wilson is. You know, everything is great. Everything is rosy. Everything is wonderful. Everything is grand and all this type of nonsense. I mean, he's married to Sierra, so in that regard, at least in his marriage life, he's winning on that one. Everything should be rosy. Everything should be happy when he wakes up in the morning, or where he goes out and he takes a look at that beautiful woman. Yeah, I guess you can say in that regard, he's winning. He's rosy. If I was married to someone who looked like that, of course I'd be, dancing in the street like Martha and the Vandellas. Of course I'd be dancing on the ceiling like Lionel Richie. Yes, everything would be looking great. Yes, the roses would be smelling better. Yes, the food would be tasting better. Yes, the streets would be cleaner. Yes, the air would be easier to breathe. Yes, all those things would happen. Just on based on looks alone. I don't know how Sierra is as a human being. She might be a complete another maniac, but just based on the surface, on the shallow, Russell Wilson has nothing to be complaining about. But in terms of his NFL career, what's he going to do? Where's he going to go? What is he going to accept? Because, I mean, this is a situation where with Russell Wilson, look, the advantage is that Russell Wilson can basically have, there's a lot more flexibility with Russell Wilson to join a team because he can take a deal where he doesn't have to be paid like a starting quarterback. Why? Because the Denver Broncos are going to be on the hook to pay him his $39 million. Now, if there was a team out there that thought that they were maybe a quarterback away from winning a championship, winning a division or something like that, maybe they would take a look. Maybe they would kick the tires, to use that cliche, on Russell Wilson. For that type of situation, I think the best quarterback available for that would be Kirk Cousins if him and the Minnesota Vikings can't get on an agreement, can't get on the same side of the tracks. I think the next best free agent option outside of Kirk Cousins is coming off an ACL tear or an Achilles tear would be Russell Wilson.
A situation, though, is I think that maybe a situation like Atlanta might fall into place. But you take a look at Chicago, who had the number one pick. They're going to draft Caleb Williams. I'm thinking about the quarterbacks, or I'm thinking about the franchises that need NFL quarterbacks. And you think about the first three picks, or the franchises that are going to be picking first in the NFL draft, with the Chicago Bears, with the Washington Commanders, with the New England Patriots. They're probably going to be drafting a quarterback. We don't know about New England, but in all, I think that the Bears are going to draft Caleb Williams, and I think my Commanders are going to be drafting either Drake May or Jaden Daniels. So it's a situation where when you take a look at some of the other quarterbacks, I'm thinking about a team like possibly, again, if Minnesota cannot land a deal with Kirk Cousins, maybe a situation where if all three quarterbacks are taken before the Atlanta Falcons get their choice, then maybe they go ahead and they take a look at a Russell Wilson. Maybe a situation where you have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who, if they don't come to an agreement with Baker Mayfield, who's a free agent, maybe they then kick the tires on Russell Wilson. But also, you have to realize that there's the situation with Justin Fields. If the Chicago Bears go ahead and they draft themselves Caleb Williams, they're going to trade Justin Fields. Where are they going to be trading him? Which team is going to be interested? Maybe a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Maybe a team like the Atlanta Falcons. Maybe a team like the Tennessee Titans. Maybe one of those teams. You have Pittsburgh with Kenny Pickett. How invested, how confident are they in Kenny Pickett? You have a team like the Tennessee Titans with Will Levis. How much invested is that organization with Will Levis? You have some other franchises. You're going to be having some franchises that might be drafting themselves a quarterback later on in the draft. If you think about maybe a Bo Nix, maybe a Michael Penix Jr., maybe a Joe Milton III out of Tennessee, who threw the hell out of the ball at the combine. Maybe they're going to have a situation where they're going to need a bridge quarterback, maybe a quarterback to put that quarterback that they drafted later on, to put them in the position that the Green Bay Packers did with Jordan Love. Put him on the bench for a couple of years, Love, while he learned the position from Aaron Rodgers, and then when the time came, he was able to play, and it looked like the arrow was pointing up in terms of positivity for Jordan Love being that franchise quarterback. Someone who might draft a Bo Nix. Someone who might draft a Michael Penix Jr. Someone who might draft another prospect in the second or third or fourth round. Maybe Russell Wilson can be that bridge quarterback for a year or two before they get ready and pass the baton on to them. The question is, again, which team are we looking at? Which team are we focusing on? So for Russell Wilson, it'll be interesting moving forward where he's going to be going. I think he's more desirable because of the fact that you can pay him below market again, because the Denver Broncos are going to be paying the majority of his salary. If this was a situation where a team was looking to pick up Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson was looking for starting quarterback money, I don't know what the market holds in that regard. Again, despite the fact that last season, despite not making the playoffs and despite being benched, Russell Wilson did throw 26 touchdowns, which I think was ranked in the top 10, and he had a passer rating of 98, which I think ranked him again in the top 10. Now, he only averaged less than 5 yards per pass attempt, or he averaged less than 6 yards per pass attempt. It was a situation where as he gets older and he gets slower and he gets more elusive, less elusive, the sacks are going to be coming more frequently. If you think about 2 years ago, he was sacked 55 times. If you think about last year, that he was sacked 45 times. So this is a situation where if you are a team that's contemplating, that's discussing getting themselves a Russell Wilson, well, this is a situation where how's our offensive line? Because, again, we're not talking about the Russell Wilson from 2017. We're not talking about the Russell Wilson from 2018. We're not talking about that guy. We're talking about a guy who's slower. We're talking about a guy who's less elusive. We're talking about a guy who, if you watched him in Denver, really never got things going because of that inconsistency that Denver had at the offensive line position. So, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It'll be interesting to see once everything's all shaken out again. Free agency starts next week, And we'll see even more because the draft, because of free agency, and also because of injuries. I mean, this could be a storyline that we could be speaking about going into training camp in terms of where Russell Wilson is going to be going. And you know, there's always a situation with a starting quarterback amongst the 32 teams in the NFL where a starting quarterback is going to go down for an extended amount of time. So Russell Wilson's services will be available, will be needed at some point. I think before the start of the regular season, it's just going to be a situation of when is that timing going to take place? Is it going to be taking place after the dominoes fall with Baker Mayfield, after the dominoes fall with Justin Fields, after the dominoes fall in terms of the quarterback that are going to be taken in the draft? Are we going to be going into training camp or off season? That will be, we'll keep an eye on that in terms of eventually where Russell Wilson is going to land. So, yeah, I guess in earnest, the NFL offseason has officially begun, right? Because this past weekend was the NFL Combine in Indianapolis, first opportunity for NFL franchises, scouts, management, potential decision makers to evaluate draftable football players through a series of workouts and interviews and medicals and players having a chance to familiarize themselves with the teams and meet with the GMs and meet with the coaches and all that good stuff. And we know about the Combine, right? I mean, you know about the Combine. Basically, it's just a series of physical tests. You got the 40-yard dash, you got the bench press, you got the vertical jump, the broad jump, various position-specific drills for the linebackers and the quarterbacks and such. And again, it's also an opportunity for NFL franchises to evaluate the players' medical information. Another advantage, though, if you think about it, because I know there's a lot of people who really don't give a damn about the NFL Combine now. I know, even though, again, it's just folks, it was on the NFL Network. And I know it's, you know, when you think about the ratings, I know there's a lot of people, I ain't watching that bullshit. That ain't football, no big deal. It's just a bunch of guys in their underwear and they're running around and they're doing bullshit drills and nonsensical drills and who cares and why should we decide which player we're going to be drafting based on their 40 time or based on their vertical or based on the cone drill and all this type of nonsense when you have, like, you know, eons and eons of college tape for them that these decision makers can evaluate before they do all this type of stuff, this, that, and the other. It's a waste of time. It's bullshit. Number one, because it is football, and because it is attached to the NFL, and because this country is football crazy, both college and the NFL. I didn't see the ratings, but I'm quite sure that the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 4 days of the Combine, I'm quite sure that the TV ratings blew away the NBA, which had a lot of good games over the past 4 days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at the same time that they were competing with the NFL Combine. So you don't even have to actually play the game of football. There doesn't actually have to be a field and the actual game. Just anything regarding the NFL, anything regarding the NFL is going to be a win situation when being compared to other programs that are being shown at the same time. But, you know, it's also a situation where, look, everything, I've always said this. I don't know how many people, I don't know if you bought a house or rented an apartment or rented any place to live or bought a car, or made a very important decision, deciding if you want to marry your fiance or move forward in a relationship that you're with your man or with your woman or whatever. But it's a situation where, look, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to assume, I'm going to guess, I'm going to speculate that if you're going to, say, for instance, purchase a house, or if you're going to rent an apartment, we know how expensive that is, right? You want to have as much information as possible before you make that decision, before you put the amount of money on a house that you're going to buy. You want to make sure that you have all of your bases covered, that you have all of the I's dotted, that you have all of the T's crossed before you make such a important decision, right? So, for instance, if you're buying a house, not just a house, I want to know about the neighborhood. If you have kids, I want to know about the schooling. If you have kids, I want to know if there's any other kids in this neighborhood and what they're like. What the crime rate? What can I walk around the neighborhood at night? You know, what does the house look like during the nighttime? What does it look like during the daytime? What does it look like on a Saturday? What's going to happen when it rains? What's going to happen when it snows? What if they're a previous owner? When you go in there, what about the sink? What about the carpet? What about the lining, everything, right? I mean, there's a situation. How does this place look at 2 a.m. in the morning? If I'm going to be living here, how does this community look at 2 a.m. in the morning? How does this community look at 2 p.m. in the afternoon on a Saturday morning or on a Sunday afternoon? You want to be as thorough as possible when making this decision, because if you purchase or if you make a decision on such a grandiose type of deal, that makes it a lot harder for you. You just can't be like, oh, fuck it. We didn't know this neighborhood sucked. Get me out of here. I mean, I know that divorce in this country is like going through the roof, and a lot of people are just saying, fuck it. If I get married, if it doesn't work out after 6 months or a year, fuck it. I'll get divorced. Why do I care? But man, I'm telling you what, right? You want, for the most part, ladies and fellas, right? The guy or the gal that you're going to marry, you want to make sure that all scenarios have been in place to see how they react before you finally say, I'm willing to spend the rest of my life with this son of a gun. Because if you're down with marriage in terms of, hey, look, man, you know, marriage is sacred. Marriage is important. It's not just a matter of the first time there's trouble, I'm going to be leaving and going to the divorce lawyer. But you want to make sure, man, how is this person in bed? How is this person when I'm in this situation? How is this person when we go on vacation? How is this person when I have to be stuck with him for more than 8 hours a day? How is this person here? How is this person dealing with this adversity? How is this person dealing with this type of situation? You want to make sure there's no stone that you want to be left unturned, correct? Am I right? Yes? So that's one of the reasons for the combine. What's the big deal about the 40-yard dash and the bench press and all this type of nonsense? It gives these coaches, it gives these general managers, it gives these presidents of football operation more information for them to make a decision. You're an idiot if you think that for the first part, or I'm sorry, the person making these decisions, the coaches, the coordinators, whoever makes the decision, whoever has the final say, you would be an idiot to think that the only thing that they do is look at the numbers from the combine and say, okay, well, based on his 40 time and based on how many times he benched 225, that's going to be the guy that we're going to draft. No, of course, but it's just more information to take in. And also, there's comparisons. Also, if you're in a situation where, like, all right, let's take a look at the quarterback position, right? But that's because in football, most of us, that's what we're most knowledgeable in. That's the most that we can, take a look with our eyes and kind of deduce what's going on with this guy, right? I mean, we don't know too much about the offensive line position, right? We don't know too much about the safety position, right? We don't know about the cornerback positions and such, but we do have some type of little knowledge about the quarterback position, right? That's the one thing that we're kind of driven to. That's the one thing that we're attracted to. That's the one thing that dominates the situation, right? We don't hear too much talk about offensive linemen. We don't hear too much talk about linebackers and such, but we do hear a lot of talk about the quarterbacks because we do have some semblance of what's happening with them, right? We can see it with our own eyes. So you take a look at a quarterback and you take a look at a guy who throws the ball the hell out of the ball, right? You take a look at a guy who has a strong step back. You take a look at a guy in a ball zings off of his from the throwing motion. The ball zings from his hands. You see that strong release, this, that, and the other. You take a look at the measurables. Then you say to yourself, okay, now we have his 40 time. We have his bench press. We have how far he threw the ball. We have all of this stuff. We have his we have him on tape, or we have him on film at the combine. We had a chance to talk to him, right? So now with these quarterbacks, now with these people who are making these decisions, whether it's the quarterback, whether it's the offensive lineman, blah, blah, blah. Now they have the measurables that they can possibly compare to others. Like, for instance, if you're thinking about drafting a linebacker, let's say, you can maybe take a look at his 40-yard dash. You could take a look at some of the times and some of the stats and everything like that from the combine, and then say measure it up against some of the best linebackers in the NFL today, right? And you kind of say to yourself, well, let me see here. His 40 time was comparable with this, and his shuttle time drill was comparable to that. So, I mean, if you take a look at things, I mean, let's just say, for instance, the best linebacker in the game is, what, Fred Warner of the San Francisco 49ers? So maybe it's a situation where you say, well, let me see, this linebacker that we might take a chance on in the second or third round because we do need to improve at that position, well, let me see, we take a look at this 40 time, and we take a look at his bench, and we take a look at his measurables, and we take a look at what he did here, and we take a look at what he did there. Then we slide that over to Fred Warner, and we say, wow, well, you know, when you take a look at his physical attributes, he's similar in that regard in terms of the 40, in terms of athleticism, in terms of this, in terms of that. He's measurable, he's comparable to a Fred Warner, who just happens to be one of the best, if not the best, linebacker in the game. If you take a look at the quarterback and you say, let me see, in terms of throwing the bomb and this, that, and the other, it's, his measurements are comparable to a Josh Allen or a Joe Burrow or a starting quarterback in the NFL. That gives more information. That kind of gives that offensive coordinator, that kind of gives that offensive-centric head coach a situation to say, hey, you know what? With this guy's measurables, with this guy's talent, I could work with something. I could work with this. You know, you give me this guy, his physical attributes, you give that guy to me, I can mold him. I can teach him. I can coach him into being the quarterback that we want to do. Some of those passes that he was making, that would work. Some of those passes that he was making that he looked best in, man, that fits what we're doing, trying to do offensively to a T. So let's go ahead and see a little bit more about drafting him. Not going ahead and say, fait accompli, we're going to go ahead and draft him. But when we're starting to analyze what's happening, what's going on, what's getting down, then something like that could come into play. When we're speaking about, you know, hairs on our chinny chin chin in terms of who are we going to be drafting, and we're going to be, and we're dead even on terms of if we're going to draft this guy or we're going to draft that guy, then possibility you bring in some of the stats from the combine, you bring in some of the video from the combine, and you might say, take a look at that throw, take a look at that run, take a look at this, take a look at that. I could work with him. And on top of taking a look at his medicals. And then also, hey, when I was interviewing this guy to me was a real winner. Or when I was interviewing this guy, yeah, this guy looks like a guy from the outside that could really help us, but when speaking about him, I didn't like his vibe. I didn't like his attitude. I didn't like I didn't like what he was saying to me. I got a bad feel. I got a bad feeling. I don't know if I could work with this guy. I didn't like his personality, this, that, and the other. I didn't like his maturity. I didn't like this, that, and the other. So all of those things from the combine is important. Now, yes, you still have the pro days, and you still have individual workouts and all of these type of things that these quarterbacks who didn't participate or some of these top players who didn't participate in the combine can do. I mean, Caleb Williams didn't participate. Drake May didn't participate. Jaden Daniels didn't participate. And they're three of the highest ranked quarterbacks that are going to be drafted in this upcoming draft. But again, they have many other opportunities for them to show their wares. And they also, though, had an opportunity while being in Indianapolis to do what? To go ahead and introduce themselves to coaches and to offensive coordinators and to GMs and to owners and to other folks. Just again, you don't think the Chicago Bears, even though Caleb Williams wasn't throwing or wasn't going to be participating in the combine from a physical standpoint, you don't think that they were itching? You don't think that they were jonesing? You don't think that they were hoping? You don't think that they were looking forward to the opportunity to go up and introduce themselves? Hi, hey, how you doing? Hey, Caleb. Matt Eber, Coach Eberflus, how you doing today? Hey, this is this, that, the other. You know, just even a, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And hey, again, you know, you go up, what's happening? What's going on? You do a little interview, you want to sit back, you know, we'd love to meet with you, get to know you a little bit better, this, that, and the other. That's what happens at the combine. And a lot of times, again, that's just as important as it is in terms of watching film and running the 40 time or what even that they did in college. I mean, you could have a fantastic college career, whether it be a quarterback, whether it be a safety, whether it be a defensive tackle. And again, that fit on a personal level from a personality standpoint might not be able to fit. And again, when you take a look at the medicals, yeah, I see that in college you suffered this, you went through that, this, that, and the others. Let's have our medical staff take a look at you and kind of get your medical so we can see exactly where we are. Because if we're going to draft you, again, we want to make sure. And I know that the old saying, you know, too much analysis cause paralysis. Well, in my regard, in the situation, man, you can never have too much information when making a decision. You know, speaking about the combine, so I'm going to throw this in here before I move on. A few weeks ago, the HBCU, the historically black college and university schools, they held the third annual NFL Combine. It was at the New Orleans Saints facility over in New Orleans. All 32 teams attended the outgoing to watch the draft prospects, or went over to watch the combine. 47 athletes from the Central Intercollegiate Athletics Association, the MEAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, and the Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference participated in the HBCU Combine. Jackson State University cornerback Isaiah Bolden was the sole HBCU player selected in the 2023 NFL draft, but several other HBCU players like Lane College defensive end Andrew Farmer have used the HBCU Combine and the Legacy Bowl to catapult their NFL careers. Now, for the ignorant and for the stupid and for the privileged who are going to sit there and say, oh, why does the fucking HBCU get to have their own fucking combine? Those fucking Democrat motherfuckers are coming around this, that, and the other. Well, because for the most part, the HBCUs, at a lot of times, cannot really, if they have any prospects, because they're not on TV all the time, because a lot of scouts aren't going to their games and such, it gives them a better opportunity. You really don't need to have a Big Ten or a Big 12 or a Pac-12 or a ACC or an SEC type of annual combine, because those guys are getting scouted ad nauseum every single week, every single game. And then they're probably going to be elected to go to the Senior Bowl and other postseason games where they can show off their wares. A lot of times from the HBCUs and the smaller schools, they don't have that opportunity. And even if they had a pro day, they're not going to have the same advantages as some of the athletes from the higher tier conferences and colleges and universities, the big time football programs. They have more opportunities. They're going to have more funds. They're going to have more abilities to show off their wares than, say, a Morgan State, or to say a Prairie View, or to say a Florida A&M. So because of that, and again, it just makes it a little bit easier that you don't have to be going to Grambling, then you don't have to be going to Prairie View, and then you don't have to be going to Coppin State, and then you don't have to be going to Maryland Eastern Shore, and then you don't have to be going, you don't have to be jet setting all over the South and over the Mid-Atlantic to go over to watch these HBCU, go to these HBCU schools to watch the prospects. You can see them all in one fell swoop. So there you is. There you is. There you go. So, yeah, man, the NFL is starting up, getting ready, getting good. And, of course, you know what's happening, right? You know what's happening, right? The always fluid NFL mock drafts are out. Mel Kiper put out his draft. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL.com, put out their draft. CBSSports.com put out their draft. You know, there's a lot of folks out there who make good money doing this stuff. They now have their first mock drafts. And it's going to be fluid because, again, we're going to be going through pro days and we're going to be going through free agency. And especially when you're speaking about the quarterback position, you know, you're going to be having situations and you're going to be having discussions about, oh, well, this kid's wunderlich test. He didn't score high enough. So what does that mean about him becoming a quarterback? And outside influences. I know there was some scuttlebutt and there were some rumors and there were some news reports going on during the regular season, then, oh my goodness gracious, Caleb Williams' father didn't want him to go to the NFL draft, that the Chicago Bears were going to have the number one draft pick, and this, that, the other. Now, that was put to rest at the combine when Caleb Williams was like, yeah, if I get drafted by the Bears, ain't nothing wrong with that. But, you know, all of this stuff now, and it's just going to be fodder for folks like me and other folks who do sports talk podcast and sports shows and make seven figures and above to be speaking on sports on the television screen. This is all going to be fodder for them to be speaking about, oh, the wunderlich test. Well, what does that mean for this guy? Is he going to be a franchise quarterback? Is he going to be smart enough? We become a little bit more sophisticated with that, especially when you're speaking about two of the possible first three quarterbacks that are going to be taken are African-American. So, you know, that wonder like bullshit about, oh, you know, he scored a 19. That must mean he's a dummy or that type of nonsense. That's been kind of quelled a little bit. But, you know, people are still going to be bringing that up. So, again, there's nothing more this than just to be sitting there just to talk about something. So all of this stuff is going to be fluid. All of this stuff is going to be, we heard from this team. We heard from that team. We heard that there's his pro combine went terrible. It went great. It went awesome. Drake May nailed it at his individual workout. Are the Commanders now going to draft him? Cliff Kingsbury is the new offensive coordinator for the Washington Commanders. Does that mean that Jaden Daniels is going to be their guy? So outside of maybe a Caton Williams, outside of, you know, the number one pick was Caleb Williams and others. You know, there's always going to be fluid. And if you take a look at enough mock drafts, you don't know what these teams are going to be doing. There's some mock drafts that have New England trading down. You have some mock drafts that have New England drafting a quarterback. You have some mock drafts that have New England drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. You don't know what's going to be happening. You don't know what's going to go on. And you know that in the drafting season, franchises lie. So, yes, for the most part, you're going to be getting, hey, so Washington, I see that you had Jaden Daniels, you had Drake May, you had Caleb Williams. You went ahead and you had a couple of offensive linemen that you're looking at. What's up? What's the deal? And you're going to hear, hey, we like all of them. We think all of them are great. We think all of them are fantastic. We think all of them can help. We think all of them are going to be fine NFL football players. Well, which one are you going to draft? Well, you know, we haven't made that decision yet, but now it could be a situation when that person, that reporter asks that question. Washington might already have it in their mind that, hell, Jaden Daniels, unless he does something completely stupid, we're going to go ahead and draft him. But you ain't going to go ahead and say that. Washington. There's rumors going along. There's rumors going around that the Atlanta Falcons possibly or the Denver Broncos possibly are looking or calling to see if you're going to if you're interested in trading that number two draft pick. What the deal? What the scoop? Well, hey, yo, hey, well, hey, yeah, hey, whoa, whoa, hey, yo, whoa, hey, yo, you know that type of stuff. So everyone's going to be coy. These organizations, these franchises are going to be playing it close to the vest. So NFL draft season is upon us. Taking a look at a lot of this stuff, when you take a look at, say, the top 10 teams, most folks, again, who do this for a living, they have Chicago, who are drafting number one because Carolina traded away their first-round draft pick so they could get Bryce Young. Whoops! They're prognosticated to draft Caleb Williams, so the Bears with the number one pick are projected to draft Williams. My Washington Commanders, it's either going to be Jaden Daniels or Drake May. That's what most of the draft prognosticators say. The New England Patriots, it's either going to be, again, drafting a quarterback, Jaden Daniels or Drake May. Most mock drafts have Arizona drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. The LA Chargers, who have the number five draft pick, they're either going to be drafting, according to the draftologists, they're either going to be drafting an offensive lineman, a Joe Alt from Notre Dame, who did well at the combine, J.C. Latham out of Alabama, or they're looking to draft themselves a wide receiver like Malik Nabers of LSU or Rome Odunze of Washington. The New York Giants at number six, a lot of the prognosticators are saying that they're looking at either a wide receiver or an offensive lineman. The Tennessee Titans drafting at number seven, they're looking at an offensive lineman, a running back, or a quarterback. Remember, and all signs are pointing to Derrick Henry not coming back, especially now since you have a coaching change out there in Nashville. Number eight, the Atlanta Falcons. They're looking about drafting an offensive an outside linebacker, trying to do something to move up to draft one of the top three quarterbacks. Would they reach for someone like a J.J. McCarthy? The Chicago Bears, with their second number one pick in the top 10, they're looking for either a wide receiver. I've seen some mock drafts that have them drafting a Brock Bowers, which would be interesting. And then the Jets drafting at number 10, they're looking to draft either an offensive lineman or a wide receiver. So when you take a look at this draft and you take a look at some of the strengths or the deepest positions at this draft, and you take a look and you see that the wide receiver position is probably the strongest in this draft, followed by cornerback, followed by the interior offensive lineman and defensive tackles. Those are the ones, those are the positions that many of the folks are saying are the deepest in this draft. So you take a look at the top wide receiver position, or you take a look at the top wide receivers, and you have Marvin Harrison out of Ohio State. You have Malik Nabers out of LSU. You have Roma Duzier out of Washington. You have Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU. You have Keon Coleman, big man from Florida State. And then Xavier Worthy, who at the combine ran, what, a 4.21 or some nonsense like that for Texas. So you take a look at some of the teams that need to upgrade at the wide receiver position. For those of you who hate the Kansas City football team, for those of you who hate Patrick Mahomes, for those of you who hate that the budding dynasty, that a dynasty is already taking place, is already shaped, and now it's just a matter of how great this dynasty is going to be, I hate to tell you this, but yeah, depending upon what happens with Ladarius Sneed and with Chris Jones in free agency, for the most part, the weakest position on Kansas City is the wide receiver position. So it's a bad time if you're a Kansas City hater to have a draft where the deepest position on this draft is going to be wide receiver. So, yeah, you don't think that, okay, the top wide receivers might be gone by the time that the Kansas City football team is ready to draft somebody, but you don't think that they won't still be able to get themselves a really good wide receiver to pair with the greatest quarterback of his generation so far, Patrick Mahomes? I mean, this is a situation where the wide receiver position is so deep. Depending, again, what happens with Sneed and with Chris Jones, they might decide that, you know what, there's a defensive lineman that might be rated even higher than any of the wide receivers that we could get. So we'll use our first-round pick on a defensive lineman or on a cornerback, and then we'll use our second- or third-round picks to replenish and upgrade our wide receiver position. And with Patrick Mahomes, hey, you know what, we've seen wide receivers and how they thrive with Mahomes because, again, he's Patrick Mahomes. But could you imagine the situation if the Kansas City football team drafts, say, for instance, Xavier, the kid from Texas, Xavier Worthy Jr.? I mean, we've seen what happens, or we've seen what has happened when Patrick Mahomes has someone with some speed to work with, somebody with some uber speed, see Tyreek Hill. We've seen the production that duo has put up. Now, I'm not saying that Xavier Worthy Jr. is going to be Tyreek Hill. But you put that type of speed on the outside and the continued improvement and getting better of Rashid, rookie wide receiver for Kansas City this year. Once again, if you're a Kansas City hater, I feel sorry for you. So, yeah, Kansas City needs a wide receiving upgrade. Chicago needs one. Carolina needs to upgrade that wide receiver position badly. Same thing with New England. Same thing with Arizona. Same thing with the New York Giants. And teams that could draft a wide receiver on day one, first three rounds, Baltimore could use a wide receiver. The New York Jets could use another wide receiver. The Buffalo Bills, if Gabe Davis goes on free agency and doesn't come back, they can use an upgrade there. So more teams need a wide receiver than they need quarterback. Because you think about the teams that need a quarterback, you think about Atlanta, you think about Washington, you think about New England, Chicago, Denver, teams that could use a quarterback. These teams that I just mentioned before, Washington, Atlanta, New England, Chicago, Denver, they need a quarterback. We need a quarterback. We need a decent quarterback to start next season. We don't have one. Desmond Ridder is not the answer in Atlanta. Sam Howell is not the answer in Washington. Mac Jones, Mr. Jones, he's got a benching going on. Bailey Zappe, not the answer in New England. Chicago, if they're going to be releasing Justin Fields, they need somebody. Denver, they're looking for a quarterback. Even though they say that Jarrett Stidham is great, he's wonderful and all that kind of stuff, I'm calling bullshit. Y'all need a starting quarterback for next season, whether that be through the draft, whether that be through free agency, whether that be through trades with Chicago. We don't know, but those teams need themselves a quarterback if they want to be competent to start and to compete in the 2024 NFL seasons. Team that could use a quarterback, not a necessity, but could use a quarterback. When you think about, the New York Giants, when you think about the Minnesota Vikings, if they can't get anything done with Kirk Cousins, then that use could be moved up to need for the Minnesota Vikings. The Las Vegas Raiders could use a quarterback. Teams that should be drafting a quarterback. When you think about the New York Jets, sorry, Aaron Rodgers, you're 40 years old. You ain't going to be playing forever. The LA Rams, Matthew Stafford is what, 35, 36 years old? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, their situation is fluid at the quarterback position. And even if they do draft Baker Mayfield, I would still draft a quarterback on the first day or in the third or fourth round to be that bridge quarterback, to be that quarterback of the future, because I do not believe that Baker Mayfield is that guy. The same thing with New Orleans. They have Derek, they have Carr, but they need somebody again to bridge that quarterback, of the future. And I think Seattle should be able to draft themselves a quarterback. The Jets, the Rams, the Buccaneers, the Saints, and the Seahawks. I'm not saying that they need to draft a quarterback to be starting at the beginning of the 2024 season. I think that the New York Jets have Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback. But you saw what happened when you had no plan B. Their plan B was a plan F with Zach Wilson being the backup quarterback. So we saw how a season can basically disintegrate when that franchise quarterback or that perceived franchise quarterback tears his Achilles 3-4 snaps into the season, like what happened with the New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers. Again, Matthew Stafford, a guy who was taking a lot of hits, a guy that has played a lot of games, a guy that has put a lot of mileage on that NFL career. It could be a situation now where if he's only going to be playing another 1 or 2 years, you need a plan B. You don't want to be like the Pittsburgh Steelers were after Ben Roethlisberger retired, and they looked around and said, we really don't have anybody to take his place. So you need to get those ducks in order if this is going to be the last season or next to the last season of a player like an Aaron Rodgers in New York, like a player like a Matthew Stafford in Los Angeles. And then the others that I just mentioned, again, they could use an upgrade. The New Orleans Saints could use an upgrade. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers could use a quarterback of the future. Is Geno Smith going to be the guy for the next 4 or 5 years that's going to be the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks and expect Seattle to do some real things to challenge the San Francisco 49ers, to challenge the LA Rams, and to challenge in the NFC West? I don't think so. So they need to be looking for a quarterback of the future. Maybe not for today, maybe not for the 2024 season, but 25, 26, absolutely. So when you speak about Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, they're going to be gone within the first five picks. Then the potential first-round pick, J.J. McCarthy. Which team is going to reach? Which team is J.J. McCarthy going to go too high, or is he going to fall a little bit? Which one of these quarterbacks? And we don't know, because we don't know which one have been invited to New York yet. But I'm quite sure Williams and Daniels and May are going to be there. I'm quite sure J.J. McCarthy is going to be there, because most intel by that time will probably have them going with the number one pick. I don't know about Bo Nix. I don't know about Michael Penix Jr. So you could have up to five quarterbacks in that green room waiting to be selected. Five or six quarterbacks in the green room waiting to be selected. Which one of these players is going to experience that Aaron Rodgers? Which one of those players is going to experience that Johnny Manziel? Which player is going to experience the guy who does the Fox Sports, Brady Quinn, I think his name, for Notre Dame? Remember when he was supposed to be a high draft pick? Which one of these players is going to experience that humiliation of, okay, what's happening here? Let me see. The teams that need a quarterback have gone somewhere else. What did that mean for some of these guys that are still in the green room waiting? I mean, the whole Geno Smith situation. You know, there's always a situation. You know, there's always a draft where they're going to have a quarterback there. Sometimes I even think that these guys just dupe these quarterbacks, these TV execs in the NFL. I know, I'm playing conspiracy bullshit, but sometimes, man, I just think that they dupe these guys into coming because it makes for great TV drama, right? even though, well, you know, they've moved out of the green room to spare them the humiliation and the embarrassment of just sitting there, and they try to put that grin on their face like, hey, everything's cool, everything's great. Yeah, let me see here. I thought that I was going in the top 15 picks, and now it's pick 26, and I'm here with my family and my friends and my girlfriend and my agent, and the coach has already left because he's out there celebrating with the with my teammates who've already been drafted before me. And I'm sitting here, and I'm all alone, and woo, that breeze coming through is cold, it is dark, it is empty, and it is lonely. So, yeah, let me still put that bullshit smile on my face, like, it's all good here, no worries, you fucking son of a bitch. The NFL doesn't want that to happen, but come on, man. You don't think that, you know, TV execs love that stuff? It's fodder. It what keeps you interested. It what keeps you glued, right? I mean, let's be for real here. When you watch the NFL draft, for the most part, you watch to see where the quarterbacks are going. And then after that, you're done. The draft lasts way too long. So once all of the suspense has been taken out of where the quarterbacks are going to be drafted, the ones that you know of, man, you ain't interested to find out which, you know, what cornerback is going to be taken pick number 19, which linebacker is going to be taken number 26, which offensive tackle is going to be taken number 30. Man, you don't care about that nonsense. So yeah, if you're a TV exec and you can, you know, have Bo Nix, or you could have a Michael Penix Jr. still be sitting in there in that green room, and you have people, You know, you have folks who are doing the NFL draft, who are broadcasting on the NFL draft. I mean, you don't have to go ahead ad nauseum and talk about the offensive tackle that was just taken or the defensive lineman that was just taken, which nobody knows about. You can always come back to the point that's going to captivate, that's going to hold the attention of the listener or the watcher of the draft, which is, wow, what happened to Bo Nix? Or, wow, what happened to J.J. McCarthy? I thought for sure that he'd be drafted at least by Denver. I thought maybe Atlanta would reach in to take him, but instead they took themselves a cornerback. Was that a good move? Was that a bad move? Wow, Sean Payton. I thought that Sean Payton and J.J. McCarthy would be a perfect marriage for each other, but instead they wouldn't draft themselves a wide receiver. They already have enough wide receivers. They drafted themselves a linebacker that no one has ever heard of, that we don't know of, that the casual fan doesn't know of because they've never seen him play. What's up with that? Is that a good move? Is that a good move? Is that a bad move? What's going on here? So that's always like good fodder, and that's always good entertainment for the NFL to keep the viewer glued to the television. So, yeah, I still think there's going to be a situation between, let's just say, for instance, the potential first-round picks such as Williams, Daniels, May, J.J. McCarthy. They're taken in the first round. Williams, Daniels, May, McCarthy. Two of them. History shows. There's the precedence. Two of them will fail. Will fail. Caleb Williams, drafted by Chicago. Jaden Daniels, drafted by my Commanders. Drake May, drafted by your New England Patriots. And let's just say J.J. McCarthy, drafted by the Denver Broncos. 4 years from now, history shows us that Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy will not be on those teams. And history shows us a Michael Penix Jr., Spencer Rattler, Joe Milton III, Michael Pratt from Tulane, Sam Hartman from Notre Dame, that they're going to have better careers in the NFL than Caleb Williams or J.J. McCarthy or Drake May or some quarterback that I haven't even heard of, right? So that's why the combine, that's why individual workouts, that's why all of this stuff is necessary, absolutely necessary. So there you go, man. There you go. Like I mentioned before, it's always fluid with the NFL. I'm not going to be scurrying away from the NFL. We'll be talking about the NFL on this podcast. Don't worry about it. For those, fuck the NBA, man. The NBA sucks. Sorry. That's my Halle Berry. That's my Layla Rochon. That's my Jada Fire. That's my Monica Bellucci. That's my Selma Hayek. The love of my life when it comes to sports teams. So, sorry. Don't mean to upset y'all, but come on, man. How much NFL do you want to hear? What? Do you watch the USFL or the XFL? I don't know. I know they merged. Do you watch spring football? Fuck that, man. Spring football is better than the fucking NBA. Bullshit. Fuck LeBron, man. This, that, and the other. Okay. All right. I'm not talking about the spring football. I guess, like I said, man, but I can't do it. I can't every week go on and do a podcast and say, oh, Mike, did you hear the news about, did you hear the news that Justin Fields might be traded here, might be traded there? Did you hear the news that the Washington Commanders might draft this guy or they might trade out in their pick? What does it mean? What's going to happen? I can't do a what if podcast. I just can't. Justin Fields, where do you think he's going to be traded to? Well, if he's traded to Atlanta, I heard these folks, wouldn't it be a perfect fit if Justin Fields was traded to Atlanta? He's from there. What the hell does that mean? So he's from the state of Georgia. So going home is supposed to be like the greatest thing. What's going to turn Justin Fields' career around is going back to Georgia, is playing for the NFL franchise that's in his state. How do you know growing up that he even liked the Atlanta Falcons? As horrible as that sports town is, what happens if he was growing up in a community where they worship the Georgia Bulldogs more than the Atlanta Falcons? That there's places in Georgia they don't even give a damn about the Atlanta Falcons. It's all about Georgia. It's all about Georgia. Georgia. I got the Georgia Bulldogs and Kirby Smart on my mind. Sorry, Brother Ray. My man is turning in his grave saying, what the fuck? But yeah, man, how about this player could get traded to Los Angeles. Oh, that's fantastic. He's from the state of California. What? What happens if he's from Susanville? I mean, what happens if he's from Chico? And he gets drafted by the Los Angeles Rams. What the fuck does that mean? It's like 400, 500 miles away. Man. And the Houston Texans have drafted in the fourth round this outside linebacker. Oh, the advantage. He's from the state of Texas. What? It's like, what? What are you talking about? He's from Amarillo. Like, what does that mean? Oh, jeez. So all of a sudden now that makes him a great fit? Like, what? Yeah, Justin Fields going back to Atlanta. You got Drake May. You got you got Kyle Pitts. You got Bijan Robinson. Yeah, that could help him out. This, that, and the other, and Raheem Morris, the offensive core, blah, blah. Okay, that I can talk about. That I can listen to. But when you throw in and he's from the state of Georgia, it's like, all right, come on, man. Now we're reaching. Now we're just bullshitting. Now we're just singing a song that doesn't need to be sung. Okay, so let's stop with that. When I get back from the boogie break, because I just need some loving, baby, I need your loving, got to have all of your loving. I want to speak about the love of my life, which is, again, as far as sports league is concerned, the NBA, Boston Celtics, Denver Nuggets. Who in the world? I've got two teams that I think if Boston's not going to reach the potential, or if Boston is not going to get out of the Eastern Conference, which teams can do it? I've come up with two. No, it ain't Cleveland. No, it ain't Philadelphia. No, it's not the New York Knicks. No. Also, Denver, man. Denver's rolling. I know about Oklahoma City, and I know about Minnesota, and I know about the Clippers. For me, it's fait accompli. The group text sent by Nikola Jokic, according to Kontavious Caldwell-Pope, it's like, all right, we're through screwing around, we're through bullshitting, we're out of this malaise. Now it's time to get down. It's time to get dirty. It's time to get funky. Yeah, I know tonight that they lost to the Phoenix Suns because no team in the fourth quarter could hit a shot until overtime or until near the end of the game when Kevin Durant says screw this. But again, I know the Celtics lost because they took the foot off the pedal and allowed Dean Wade to score like 20-something points in the fourth quarter. One game, no big deal. The NBA Finals, Boston, Denver. Can't wait on Thursday to see that game. But yeah, I'll talk about all that stuff. I'll talk about, again, the two teams in the Eastern Conference who I think can beat the Boston Celtics. And also I want to talk about Victor Wembanyama. Wembanyama and his arch rival, his nemesis, his, you know, the Wembanyama Holmgren era of NBA basketball has begun. Is it fair to say that Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama, is it fair to say that they're going to be rivals and the totality of what they mean for the organization? Ooh, all that stuff I'm going to be discussing next. Aren't you excited? Don't you feel good? You know what's going to make you feel even better? Just listening to a little bit of Levi Stubbs, listening to a little bit of Obi Benson, listening a little bit to a little bit of Lawrence Payton, listening to a little bit of the only remaining top Duke Fakir, Baby, I Need Your Lovin'. I've got to have all your lovin'. Wendell Wallace, Wendell's World in Sports.
Baby, I need your lovin'. Got to have all.
Wendell's World in Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. Thank you, fellas. Appreciate that. Got up and moved a little bit. You're supposed to be, according to Nadine, the fitness instructor at LVAC, I'm taking her body pump express class. The fact that once you are done expressing your body pump, that you should try moving. Still move around. Now, the next day, you should not move. You should not do any heavy lifting or anything like that. Why? Because you need your muscles that have torn through the working out. You need for them to repair. So you do yoga, you do walking, you do some swimming, you do laying on the couch watching basketball. Oh, wait a minute. That's what I do. But you're supposed to take a rest. You're supposed to be walking up and moving. So one of the things that, you know, she implied that I could do was dance. So during the boogie breaks, I get down and I boogie a little bit before I sit back down and speak about what's happening in the world of sports. Because again, today went out and I did my body pump. Started off with the legs, very challenging. Then we did a very good chest track, and then we went over and to the back and did the back track. A lot of clean and presses. Thank you, Nadine, for that one. Then we went ahead. We did the combo of the bides and the tries, a lot of good bicep work. Then we went over and did the lunges with the shoulders. My knees are too screwed up to be doing any type of lunges. I'm too old, I'm too fat, and my knees are too shot to be doing the exercises that they were doing, especially when you combine the shoulder routine. So I just focused on working on my shoulders. Then we did the abs, and woo! Yeah, those abs, baby. I need to work on that, did the cool down, flirted with a little bit of the females there, left, and now everything is all good. Huh? Huh? Yeah. Wendell's World in Sports, I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. All right, let's get to some NBA standings and some news. For the most part, the Boston Celtics, clearly the best team in the Eastern Conference. They won 11 games in a row again. Had Cleveland on the ropes. Cleveland was desperate. They were without Donovan Mitchell. They had lost a couple of bad games. They had a couple of bad performances in their losses. So they played with a sense of urgency, especially in that fourth quarter that the Boston Celtics did not play with. Dean Wade got hot, started hitting like three or four straight threes in a row, top of the key. I mean, he was hot. Right side, top of the key, extended. So he was the one that put the put back basket to give the Cavaliers the victory. That last call on Jason Tatum, man. Come on, man. If luckily, it was overturned, but it was a situation where, again, with the referees, what you're going to call that? First, I thought they called it because Darius Garland, who was guarding Tatum on that 19-foot fadeaway right side shot, I thought he hit him on the wrist, or I thought he hit him on the elbow, the shooting elbow. Then they were saying that, well, you know, he hit him from below. Then I thought, watching the replays, that if they were going to bail out Tatum, it was going to be because Garland landed in his shooting area. But I was taking a look at all that and said, there is no fucking way that this call can stand. And if it is, that's garbage. That is absolute garbage. One of the things, I don't know what you can do. I have no idea what you can do, but the officiating in the NBA this season has been fucking absolutely atrocious. When you've got Monty Williams after a game losing his mind and then bringing out the fact, I've heard a couple of coaches, the coaches for Toronto also said the same thing. That was absolute crap. But when you have the coaches saying, look, during these outbursts, look, we've been sending film to the league. Look, we know we've been getting jobs, but we've been playing through it. It's a situation where I can understand the Lakers' bullshit about we don't go to the line enough, and since we're not a three-point shooting team, we take everything to the basket. I know LeBron goes to the basket. I know he's big, and I know he's strong, and I know he initiates contact, but the Lakers, I forgot who they lost to or almost lost to, and they were bitching and moaning about they weren't getting enough free throws, and Darvin Ham and his post-game was bitching and moaning about they don't get enough foul calls against them. I think that's bullshit, and I think that's nonsense in terms of just – when you have Monty Williams losing it after a game, which he definitely got hosed playing the Knicks. And we're speaking about Monty Williams and the Detroit Pistons, who are just trying to win themselves double digits games. Yeah, I know they're far out of the playoffs, and whether you win or lose the season for Detroit really doesn't make any difference if you win 12 games or 14 games. What's the difference? But look, man, when you got a team out there trying to get better, and you got Monty Williams, who, hey, man, he might be in the first year of his contract, and I'm quite sure he can say, fuck it, fire me after the season. You still got to pay me. But still, the situation where, look, man, we got people whose jobs are on the line in terms of how well they do, how well we do as a team. And when you take those opportunities away from them, come on, man, you're putting their jobs in jeopardy. So I can understand the coach for Toronto. I can understand Monty Williams, two guys who, after every game, are bitching and moaning and whining about the referees to get themselves an edge up on the next game. They're not doing the infamous or the famous, one of the best NBA rants I've seen in a little while, when Pat Riley, when he was at the end of his tenure with the Miami Heat, and Miami was terrible. This is after they won the championship, and I think Shaq was sent away or something. I don't know what happened, but the Heat were absolutely terrible. And Pat Riley went to the podium after the game, and you could just tell, man. It was almost like someone told him that his dog and the dog's puppies just got ran over by a semi a couple of times. And he was just sitting up there, and he was just like, you know, I know that we're bad, and, you know, the referees, they just take a look at it, and they just say, fuck it. I mean, you know, we're supposed to, we need to, our players get fouled, but, you know, we're not any good. We're a bad team. And the referees just take a look at that, and they just say, fuck it. So I'm just like, get them, Pat. So, yeah, so, but the NBA officiating has been atrocious. But if they were going to overturn that Peyton, that Jason Tatum call, that would have been, or they, if they would have kept that, that would have been absolutely ridiculous. But the Celtics are rolling. Before that loss, they had won 11 games in a row. They have an overall record of 48-13. Again, on Thursday, they're going to be playing the Denver Nuggets in Denver. The Celtics, during that 11-game winning streak, outscored their opponents by almost 12 per game, which would be the fifth best mark in NBA history, with the four other teams with those better marks all having gone on to win the championship. They beat Golden State on Sunday. That was kind of like the pinnacle. That was kind of like the climax of this little run that they've been on, as you saw the next night that they played, or the next game that they played against Cleveland. But they beat Golden State 140-88. It was the third time this season they had beaten a team by at least 50 points. The last time they beat a team by 50 points, they got their coach fired, which was Brooklyn and Jacques Vaughn. It was kind of like, okay, we're done here. So, look, Boston can beat you in several different ways. One of the things With Boston, I was always concerned about their propensity to always stay with the three-point shot. With the Celtics, it was kind of like the Houston Rockets back in the Mike D'Antoni era. It was a situation where, look, man, we're going to win this game or we're going to lose this game with a three-point shot. So if there comes a time when our three-point shots aren't going in, to rectify that, we're just going to shoot more of them. So there really wasn't any plan B with D'Antoni. It was just keep shooting threes, and if hopefully eventually we'll try to fall in. And James Harden and all those guys just kept firing and firing and firing away. And when they played the Golden State Warriors in the conference finals in the playoffs, I mean, you remember Game 6 or Game 7, that in the third or fourth quarters, the Rockets would be firing and missing, and that would be the only thing that they were doing. They wouldn't be trying to get to the rim. They wouldn't be trying to run a little action. They wouldn't be trying to get any type of easy baskets, quick hitters, nothing. It would just keep shooting threes, and hopefully they'll fall in. Oh, we've missed 20 in a row. We've missed 25 in a row. Who cares? Keep shooting. That was kind of like the Joe Mazzulla has really emphasized that they want to shoot a whole lot of three-pointers. So my thing was always, look, when the Celtics are rolling, and they've got a lot of really good three-point shooters. Tatum can hit the three. Brown can hit the three. Porzingis can hit the three. Derek White can hit the three. Drew Holiday, a mediocre to bad three-point shooter, but he can put them up with a little bit. Pritchard coming off the bench. Their bench guys can all shoot threes. Al Horford from the front court position, he can shoot threes. So their team, mainly, their personnel mainly is a three-point shooting type of team, even though Tatum now has evolved along with Brown to be able to get a shot at the rim, near the rim, get to the line. Before, early in his career, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, I mean, you'd see Jason Tatum try to go one-on-one, which would always end up in a step-back side three-point shot. Now we see Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown getting to the rim or getting better looking shots other than contested three-point shot, which they were doing a lot of or too much of in their first 3 or 4 years in the NBA. So you take a look, like for instance, in the game against Philadelphia, right? The Celtics go 23% from the three-point line. They were 5 for 22. But they still won because they outscored Philly by 20 points in the restricted area and by 23 at the three-throw line, which meant Brown and Tatum were getting to the line. So this is a situation where as long as Porzingis stays healthy, I think this is a situation where it's clearly Boston is the best team in the Eastern Conference. As I mentioned before, I think there's two teams that could upend. The two teams with the best opportunity to beat them. I'm not saying that they should be favored. I'm not saying that this is beyond the radar, but stranger things have happened. If the Celtics remain relatively healthy, because of course Porzingis goes down or Tatum or Brown, of course the storyline is going to change. But if the Celtics are going to be health-wise at the same level, the only two teams in the Eastern Conference who I think could upset, it would be a massive upset, but the two teams that could pull off the upset would be the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat. Look, the Milwaukee Bucks, it was an ugly game against the LA Clippers on, when did they play? I think it was Monday. I watched that game, yeah, because the Clippers played, it was yesterday. Clippers played the Bucks, and then Oklahoma City played the LA Lakers that Monday doubleheader, last night's doubleheader. So, yeah, the Clippers and the Bucks, a slobber knocker, 113-106. The Milwaukee Bucks, the importance of the game, they played it without Giannis, they played it without Chris Middleton, and they still won because Damian Lillard had an efficient 41 points, 12 of 22 from the field, 4 of 13 from the three-point line, 13 of 13 from the foul line in 42 minutes. Bobby Portis, taking the place of Giannis, scored 28 points. And when I say taking the place, he came off the bench, but in terms of the scoring, in terms of the impact, he was fantastic. 28 points, 12 of 18 from the field, 2 of 3 from the three-point line, along with 16 rebounds in 30 minutes. Again, it was the best performance by the Milwaukee Bucks, outscoring the Clippers 40-25 in the fourth after being down by 13 near the end of the third quarter. So Milwaukee now, are they starting to live up to preseason expectations? They've been unbeaten since the All-Star break. They beat the Timberwolves, the game which ESPN went all in and all access. Oh, the Timberwolves this and the Timberwolves that and Anthony Edwards this and Anthony Edwards that. The Bucks went on the road, beat them. The game wasn't pretty. They had to hold on at the end, but a win is a win over a team that many people feel are contenders in the Western Conference. So they beat the Timberwolves on the road after the All-Star break. Then they go to Philadelphia and beat them on the road. Then they go home in a way against Charlotte and come up with victory there. Play at Chicago last Friday, ESPN game, beat them pretty handily, and then again, they beat the Clippers. So the defensive numbers are much better under Doc Rivers so far. But look, we'll see what happens in these next seven games. That's going to be the ultimate test. They have to. They have the second toughest schedule the rest of the season. They're going to be going on the four-game trip to California. Wednesday, they will be at Golden State. And then they got the Clippers again on Sunday, who I'm quite sure are pretty upset about that loss. And then they also have the LA Lakers. I think that game is going to be, what, primetime on Saturday or something like that? But they'll be playing them also. So this four-game trip is going to give us a little bit more evidence, if possibly, that the Celtics are going to be slipping. Will Milwaukee be there to take advantage of the situation? Number one, you got Giannis. You can never count out Giannis. Again, Giannis, I'll say it again. People are talking about Nikola Jokic, for if you're Serbian. Clearly the best player in the game. But why are people talking about, hey, could SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, could he also be a guy that could be contending for the MVP? People talk about Jason Tatum. Has Jason Tatum risen his level of play to be MVP candidate worthy? I think that all of a sudden now we're starting to discount, or we're starting to dismiss, or we're starting to take Giannis for granted. As I mentioned before, man, Giannis had added a little bit to his game. I think his three-point shooting has become a little bit more consistent. He's not taking as many three-point shots as he had before. When he's taking them, he's making them a lot more. He's never going to be Ray Allen. He's never going to be Reggie Miller. He's never going to be a dead-eye three-point shooter. But the game that he plays is a situation where, even if you think there might be a situation where he could shoot a three-pointer, that's going to put the defensive player guarding him at a disposition for Giannis to do his dips and his twirls and his flips and his trips to the basket. It's a situation where I think that he's shooting more 12 to 15 foot jump shots, which I think, forget the 3-point shot. Giannis doesn't need to try to work himself into being a 3-point shooter. If you want to take two or three a game just because he's Giannis, just because he's the face of the franchise and the guy most responsible to for Milwaukee, if they're going to win the championship, making the most money and all that type of stuff, if he wants to go out there and shoot three-point shots a game, two of them being bad off of one pass or coming down on a break, or he got a rebound and he's bringing the ball up and he's like, fuck it, let me go ahead and shoot a 25-footer. Because he's Giannis, yeah, you can live with that. But I'm more interested in seeing him, especially when the playoffs start, when his path to the basket is going to be a lot less clear. I want to see him be able to pull up and hit that 12-footer, hit that 15-foot foul line jump shot. If he could do that, and Giannis has been doing that a lot more this season. And you take a look, I think his passing numbers are better. I think his rebounding numbers are still stabilized, and he's averaging over 30 points a game. Again, I'm not saying that Giannis is the best player in the league, because I think that's Jokic's title, and I think SGA is one of the best two or three or four players in the game. But, man, just to kind of talk about MVP and speak on Jokic and speak on SGA and then say, oh, yeah, and Giannis is pretty good too. No, 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 no. When you're speaking about contenders, true contenders, I think you also need to include Adenikupo on what he's doing this season. So I think you have that element. If the Celtics and the Bucks play in the playoff this season, and you also have Damian Lillard now getting a little bit more comfortable. He went full Portland a game against the Clippers on Monday. He was just like, oh, no Giannis and no Middleton? Look out, y'all. Flashback going back to my days in Portland. And he, like I mentioned before, turned the ball over a little bit. But, again, an efficient 41 points. And Bobby Portis coming through, too. So Excellent win by the Milwaukee Bucks. They're champions. When you speak about Middleton, when you speak about Giannis, when you speak about Bobby Portis, you still have that DNA. You have a coach that has won a championship, albeit a little while ago, but Doc Rivers, if he can exercise some of his playoff demons in terms of giving up 3-1 leads and 3-2 advantages to lose series, I know that's always there, but also if you're going to speak about that, you also have to speak about the fact that he is an NBA champion and was a Kendrick Perkins injury away from dethroning the Los Angeles Lakers years ago with the KG, Paul Pierce, and Rajon Rondo, Ray Allen team, the Celtics back in the 2009-2010 season. So look out for the Milwaukee Bucks if there's going to be a situation where Boston's going to lose. And, of course, the other team that I'm picking is the Miami Heat. The Miami Heat are just motherfuckers, man. I mean, that's just a team where it's just like every single year. I don't know what it is about them, but if the that foundation for the Celtics of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, that DNA, one of the bugaboos, one of the boogeymen in their past that they haven't exercised just yet, one of those demons, one of those teams that they haven't exercised just yet, are the Miami Heat. When you speak about not just last year's conference conference finals, where they won how many games? What, 3 games on the road? Game 7 at Boston Garden or at the TD Waterhouse or wherever the Celtics play. But also, this was a situation where they upended the Celtics in the playoffs when they were playing in the bubble the last time also before last season that the Miami Heat made the NBA championship series. So, look, you've got the best coach, if not the best coach, one of the best coaches in the NBA, Eric Spoelstra. You have one of the best playoff performers in Jimmy Butler, now starting to get into shape, now starting to go ahead and get some things going. You got Bam Adebayo, who always gives Miami energy and efficiency from the offensive end and can protect the rim also at a defensive standpoint, which could be problematic for Kristaps Porzingis because not only can Adebayo guard Porzingis at the rim, but he can also guard him from out front where Porzingis can get off three-point shots, take the bigger man off the dribble. So I think Miami, their DNA, their culture, it's always a situation where they're getting ready. And right now they're, what, in sixth place? They've won 8 out of their last 10. There are a couple of games behind Philadelphia and Orlando and the New York Knicks. So this could be a situation that they continue to play at this level without Tyler Hero, without some others that are injured. You're talking about a situation now where this team, this nucleus, who have been used to winning conference championships and playing in big games and playing in NBA finals, now you're speaking about a team in the Miami Heat that could jump up to the number 4 spot and have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. Man, the Miami Heat, Jaime Jaquez has been the rookie for UCLA. Here's a guy that has come in, the perfect Heat player, fits that perfect Heat mentality, which is we don't take any fucking days off. We don't care about sickness. We don't care about health. We don't care about injuries. We don't care about any of that nonsense. It's us against the world. We're going to work. We're going to grind. And we're going to whine. We're going to grind you down. And for some amazing reason, the only team that's really not affected by that by the playoff time is the Miami Heat. Yeah, they have their injuries. Yeah, they have their banged up folks. But you have Caleb Martin's of the world. You have the Duncan Robinson's of the world. And you have those type of unsung players. It'd be interesting now to see what Terry Rozier is going to do. He's the excellent type of player for the Miami Heat who does nothing, who really doesn't make an impact during the regular season. And all of a sudden, you get in a playoff series in the Eastern semifinals and finals, and he's averaging 15, 16, 17 points a game, shooting 60% from the field and 48% from the three-point line. And this is a guy who spearheads a 16-2 or 16-7 or 8 run by the Miami Heat to either go with the lead or put some separation on the road against the team in the playoffs. Terry Rozier is that guy. Jaime Jaquez is that guy. The Miami Heat always have one of those guys that do that when the playoff time comes. So, again, until the Boston Celtics can exercise that demon known as the Miami Heat, the Heat always have an opportunity. They always have a chance. I'm not saying that if they meet Boston in the playoffs this season that they should be the favorites or anything like that, but if there's going to be any team that can beat the Boston Celtics this season. It ain't the Philadelphia 76ers. We don't know about the status of Joel Embiid. It ain't going to be the New York Knicks. Again, Jalen Brunson got injured. It's a lot better than what we thought when we saw Brunson in the game against Cleveland go up and hurt his knee. I thought he blew out his knee. But, yeah, the situation that he'll be back. But when is Obi Anunoby going to come back? When is Julius Randle going to come back? Is Julius Randle going to come back? When is Bogdanović going to up his game? How much are you going to be relying on Alex Burks from the offensive point of view? So the Knicks, I think, have too many questions in terms of them being real contenders. And I think Orlando is just too young, and Paolo Banchero is not at that level yet where he can go against the Tatums of the world in terms of superstars, in terms of the best players on their team, and be able to overcome that for the Orlando Magic. So those are the two teams. Quickly, I think that the Denver Nuggets, I know again that they lost to the Phoenix Suns. Man, you talking about Jamal Murray and Jokic had a good game, but seven turnovers? They just seemed out of sync. It was just a situation where it was like they were just off. The shooting was off. Everything was just off. But before that, the six games before that against Phoenix, they were playing great. Jokic, dominance, reminding people again that he's the best player in the league. Of course, we should have known. Getting great performances from Michael Porter Jr., averaging, 23, 24 points over that six-game winning streak. Went 10 for 10 against the Lakers. Yeah, averaged 22 points, 10 rebounds in the six-game winning streak. 10 for 10 from the field against the Lakers. LeBron was doing his thing. He scored his 40,000 point. The Lakers were up, this, that, and the other. And then there was a time that Denver just said, all right, enough fucking around. We're done. We're done messing around. Time for us to put you boys away. And in that fourth quarter, Jokic did. It's funny because people are, especially Laker fans, we play Denver tough. Take a look at the games from the Western Conference Finals last season. We played Denver tough. Those were tough games. Blah, blah, blah. Man, y'all weren't beating Denver. You guys weren't beating Denver. You really think that you guys can beat Denver? Anthony Davis, power. Anthony Davis has had a great year. He ain't got anything for Nikola Jokic in terms of slowing him down when he needs to. Jamal Murray. You know the thing about Jamal Murray? Watch Jamal Murray and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander play. It's like they're cut from the. It's like they're built from the same factory. Now, they're both from Ontario. They're both from the beautiful country of Canada. They're both from the beautiful suburbs of Toronto. But, man, you watch those guys play. It's like, man, the same coach was coaching you on how to play offense. Now, I think that Murray, offensively, I think, had a little bit more to his game in terms of, look, Shai is a guy who relies on the mid-range jump shot. He gets where his game is reminiscent, I think. I want to go old school on you guys. Oscar Robertson. Watch video clips of Oscar Robertson. He ain't jumping over anybody. He's not, you know, flying past anybody. He just gets to where he wants to go. He's going to do it in a very methodical approach, and then he's just going to shoot over you. Watch all of the highlights. Go to YouTube right now, especially you young folks who think that the NBA started when LeBron came in 2003. Watch some of the YouTube clips of Oscar Robertson, and then watch Shai Gilgeous-Alexander play. It's like it's the same type of mentality where, look, I'm just going to get to this spot right here. I'm going to just take my time, and I'm just going to shoot over you, and there's nothing that you can do about that. The reason why I say I think Murray has a more... I'm not saying that Murray is a better player. How am I trying to say this? I think while Murray has just a little bit more offensively, it's because I think Murray can execute the pick and roll a lot better. Now, when you're playing with Nikola Jokic, I mean, Jokic is going to make any point guard look better. But you know what? Jokic also benefits from playing with Murray on that pick and roll. So it's the yin and the yang. They both help each other. They both make each other look better. But also, just the way that Murray operates the pick and roll and his ability to hit that three-point shot, I think it's more consistent than Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. But he is just like Alexander in terms of, you know, he'll back you in, and his footwork is fantastic. So again, you watch those guys play, it's like carbon copies of each other. Whoever coached them in Ontario, bravo, fantastic, way to go. So there you go. But yeah, so the Nuggets doing their thing. Real quick, I want to speak about, I'll speak about the Lakers later, fuck them. I want to get to Victor Wembanyama, because I want to ask this question. Has the first part of the Victor Wembanyama era has started in earnest? Now, I know people, oh, well, when he first stepped into the court and this, that, and the other, the era has started. No, he was still learning the game. Nah, he was still trying to get familiar with the NBA, the speed and everything like that. If you watch Victor play now, instead of when he played the first couple of months of the season, a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's now playing center instead of trying to play power forward. Him and Zach Collins no longer playing together any minutes. He's now the center. I think now there's a situation where he'll still shoot three-pointers, but I think he's a lot more comfortable inside of the three-point line. So you'll see him shoot a lot more twos than he did at the beginning of the season. I think while he tends to over-dribble, I still think there's some type of regression, or I still think there's some sort of calming down when it comes to putting the ball behind his back and between his legs and doing all this type of stuff when he's trying to make a one-on-one move. I think there's more like get the ball, fucking go to the rim. Don't get the ball. Don't put it between your legs. Don't put the ball behind your back. Don't do any of that bullshit. Put the ball. There's more like one. Put the ball and get the ball to the hoop. So Wembanyama has been improving month after month. Give credit to the Spurs and to Coach Popovich. Now, they're not winning any games, but this is basically a season that's just centered around Victor Wembanyama. I think in terms of one-loss records, the San Antonio Spurs are like, yeah, we would like to win, but that's not our main goal. Our main goal is to see what we've got Victor Wembanyama and then tailor his game to what we need to do to make him be successful. But that game against Oklahoma City last week, that was the I've arrived for real this past week against OKC. Went up against Chet Holmgren, 28 points, 13 rebounds, 7 assists, 5 blocks. In the fourth quarter, both players went at it. Both players, Holmgren and Wembanyama, they were going at it, and they were going at it hard. And one thing I like is the fact that they always talk about Wembanyama and Holmgren don't like each other. And it's a healthy, I don't like him. It's not a, I don't like Victor because he's French and he's black and ain't no this, that, and the other is going to be better than me. And Wembanyama's hate for, it's competitive. It's nothing personal. Fuck Chet Holmgren, man. That motherfucker, just because he's American, you motherfucker think that he's better than me? Fuck him. No, it's not. It's none of that. It's not that. They both have a healthy respect for each other, but that competitive fire that they have in each other, and I love the fact that they want to be better than each other. This is not a situation. Victor ain't doing the old, oh, no, Chet's better than me. No, I'm just trying to, no. He's like, fuck that, I'm better than Chet Holmgren. So when he comes out and says it's very important for him to win the Rookie of the Year, what he's saying is, yeah, it's very important because I want to be better than Chet Holmgren. I think that I'm better than Chet Holmgren. So that's going to be the first, like, you know, check off the mark on my ascension to being legendary, to being one of the best that's ever played this game. For me to reach that pinnacle, for me to reach that mountaintop, for me to reach those heights, the first thing I need to do is to establish the fact that I am better than Chet Holmgren, and not in year 5, not in year 7, not when I'm 26 or 28 or 32. I'm talking about now. This is a situation, if we're going to be that rival, if we're going to be the Larry Bird and Magic Johnson of the new millennium for this generation, if you remember that rivalry between Bird and Magic, when it first started, Bird was better. Just in terms of being the individual player. I love Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson's my guy, but I'll be honest with you, now that I'm older, in my fandom for Magic Johnson, the basketball player, has decreased with age and maturity, and my acceptance and reverence and respect for Larry Bird as the basketball player has grown due to my maturity and due to that situation. But realistically, when they first started, Larry Bird was a better basketball player than Magic Johnson. But then, like around the first part of the rivalry, it was Bird. But then, after it was a situation where it was like, okay, Kareem's getting older and now it's time for Magic to take over, Magic Johnson was the better player. And Magic Johnson then turned out to be the best player of those two. That's not disrespect Larry Bird, who was top 12, top 15 who's ever played this game. Magic is probably top 7 or top 8, somewhere around there. One of the best shooting guards in the history of the game, Larry Bird. One of the best point guard, if not the best point guard in the game, Magic Johnson. So, you know, this is no disrespect, but Victor Wembanyama is starting to state, no, there ain't going to be a situation because Chet is a little bit older than I am, and technically his rookie year was his last year. He just didn't play. This is his first time actually playing on the court, but when you're in the NBA and you get the NBA medicals and you get the NBA coaching and you get the NBA way of life, even though you're not playing, that's an advantage even for someone like me and Chet, even for someone like Victor Wembanyama, who played professional basketball in France. But it's a situation where Chet's like, I want to be the best. Victor wants to be the best. And Victor's like, no, I'm the best, chump. So that game was fantastic. So now people are sitting there looking. February, Wembanyama, who I think is averaging 20-10 this season anyway, he's the month of February, the way he celebrated Black History Month was outstanding. 21 points, 10 rebounds, 4.5 assists, 4 blocks, in like under 29 minutes a game. You want to compare somebody? LeBron, his rookie season in 2003 and 4. In February, he averaged 21 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists in 39 minutes. So Victor, and I know that Alfred Sengun put the ass whooping on him the other night with 45 points. But look, again, people are speaking about him and Holmgren going to be that biggest rivalry. And when you take a look at rivalries in the NBA in the history, Wilt Chamberlain versus Bill Russell, Oscar Robertson versus Jerry West, LeBron versus Kevin Durant, Magic and Larry Bird. When you speak about the quote-unquote rivalries, the one reason why I say I don't know if that's going to be a true rivalry of that level is because of this. If you take a look at Wilt and you take a look at Bill Russell, if you take a look at LeBron and you take a look at KD, if you take a look at Magic, you take a look at Bird. These were players who were the cornerstone, who were the franchise, who were the everything for their organization, right? Bill Russell, Boston Celtics, 8 and winning 11 championships in 13 years without Bill Russell. Red Auerbach is not considered one of the greatest coaches of all time if it's not for drafting and using Bill Russell the way that he did. Wilt Chamberlain, the ascension that he held his team, that he led his team to, wouldn't have been possible without his brilliance. Magic, Larry, all of these guys were legendary, were the main guys on their team. Victor Wembanyama is going to be the main guy for the San Antonio Spurs. They're doing everything again to see what they can do to make him the main guy. Everything is going to be surrounded by Victor Wembanyama. Everything in terms of how the San Antonio Spurs are going to be performing in years to come is going to be centered, is going to be relied upon, is going to be the main responsibility for Victor Wembanyama. Victor Wembanyama is going to be the Batman for the San Antonio Spurs for the next 10, 12 years, period. That is the responsibility. That is what he signed up for. Those are the expectations. Chet Holmgren, on the other hand, the best that Chet Holmgren can do is be an excellent Robin. Because as long as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on that team for Oklahoma City, he will be the Batman. He will assume the Victor Wembanyama role in terms of what can we do as an organization to surround Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's with players that can make him better. Chet Holmgren is a very good and excellent complementary piece for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. It ain't the other reason. It ain't the other way around. You know, it ain't the situation where we've got Chet Holmgren. Now, let's see what we can do to build around him. No. It's what can we do to build around Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Oh, we've got this humongous, this fantastic, this important piece that we can put next to him, which is Chet Holmgren. And that's no disregard, and that's no disrespect for Chet, because it's a situation when what's wrong with being Kobe Bryant when you've got Shaquille O'Neal? What's the problem with being Scottie Pippen when you've got Michael Jordan? What's the problem of being Dwayne Wade when you've got LeBron James? What's the problem of being Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the later part of his career when you've got Magic Johnson? What's the problem of being Kevin McHale when you've got Larry Bird? So in those scenarios, A, those guys won championships. B, those guys that played Robin to their Batman, they're still regarded as great players. I don't think anybody is disregarding Scottie Pippen. I don't think people are disregarding Dwayne Wade. I don't think people are disregarding any of those great players. I definitely don't think anybody is disregarding Kobe Bryant when he won his first three championships with Shaquille O'Neal. Then no one's going to be disregarding or disrespecting or downgrading Paul Gasol when he helped Kobe win two championships when Kobe assumed the Batman role and then Paul Gasol was brought in to play Robin. So it ain't a disrespect to say that Chet Holmgren is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's Robin, because as long as Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is on that team, he will be the Batman. So when you're thinking about or when you're portraying or when you're trying to talk about the Wembanyama versus Chet Holmgren type of rivalry that's going on, what makes it a little bit skewed is the fact that really, when you're competing for championships, when you're competing for dominance as a team, you can really say that it's the SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander versus Victor Wembanyama rivalry, because those are going to be the guys that's going to determine whether the San Antonio Spurs or the Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be able to win championships moving forward. So that's my deal on that. And I think Chet, I was wrong about him. I thought that his weight or his lack of weight would be a problem. Now, I did see him get basically thrown around and ragdolled against Yusuf Nurkic in the Phoenix Suns. He grabbed, 31 rebounds or some nonsense like that. So I'm thinking to myself, woo, in a playoff series, I wonder how that's going to hold up, because Bismack Biyombo is not going to be able to hold up for the Oklahoma City Thunder, because, look, you're not going to be able to, I don't think you're going to be able, once the playoffs start and you're facing a Jokic or you're facing an Aaron Gordon or you're facing one of these, an Anthony Davis or a Rudy Gobert, I don't think that you're going to be able to play Chet Holmgren 42 minutes a game or 40 minutes a game over a seven-game series. I think he's going to need a little bit more rest. I think he's going to need a little bit more recovery from that while the game's going on. What does that mean for the Oklahoma City Thunder moving forward, who really don't have themselves an Aaron Gordon type who can be a center if the team wants to play small ball? So that would be my only interest in that concerning Chet Holmgren. But for the most part, you have a guy who's first rookie ever who's made 100 threes and 100 blocks or some nonsense like that. So Holmgren's the real deal. I just think that the speaking about he's going to be, the rival to Victor Wembanyama, a little bit premature. All right, real quick, when we come back, last segment of the program, it won't take long. I'm just going to discuss Bronny James, and I'm going to discuss my Georgetown Hoyas. Moving forward. Wendell Wallace, Wendell's World and Sports.
I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I said to myself, I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I was telling myself, I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. Nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't give me integration. Give me truth, communication. I don't give me sorrow. I want equal opportunity to live tomorrow. Give me schools and give me better books so I can read about myself and gain my true looks.
Last segment of the podcast. Last segment of the program, Wendell's World of Sports. I'm your host, Wendell Wallace. So glad that you could be with us. I will make this extremely short because I know y'all got to get out of here. I just wanted to say this, man, about Bronny James. His agent, Clutch Sports, Rich Paul, who's his daddy's agent, said in an interview with ESPN about turning pro after the season. He said that he'll make a decision based on which teams are interested, not projections. James was highly rated, the four-star recruit in the 2023 recruiting class out of Sierra Canyon High School in the Southern California area. The prospect as a high schooler, he was seen as a facilitator, scorer, and defensive weapon. He was a projected lottery pick and a top 15 prospect in the CBS Sports Prospect rankings entering the summer before suffering sudden cardiac arrest during a workout in August. Thank Jesus that he's able to be cleared and diagnosed and treated for a congenital heart defect. So thank Jesus for that. But this season, he has played in 26 games or 20 games for the Trojans. I think he came back. I think he missed November and December. I think he came back in December or something like that. I know he missed the first part of the season or the first month of the season. Came back. He's averaging 5 points, 2 assists, and two rebounds per game. Now, earlier this week, LeBron, his father, deleted a pair of tweets chastising the media over speculation that has come from Bronny's placement in mock drafts. He tweeted, can y'all please just let the kid be a kid and enjoy college basketball? If y'all don't know, he doesn't care what a mock draft says. He just works, earned, not given. Now, okay, number one, LeBron, ain't nobody picking on you kid with that bullshit, okay, because it's a mock draft. Okay, so if you're speaking about, I mean, if your son's in the mock draft, that means there's about, I don't know, 29 other kids or other players that are also in that mock draft. So I don't know exactly what that means in terms of, it's a mock draft. His teammate, Isaiah Collier, has been jumping up and down from number one and number five to number three. Then it seems like every time Collier comes out and has a game, if he does well, he moves up. If he does badly, he moves down. So I don't know what you're talking about, leaving your son alone or, you know, just let him be a kid. Could you say that about the others? Because you got that kid from Baylor. Believe me, you got a lot of other prospects out there who are getting more hype, who are getting more scrutiny. I mean, hell, Caitlin Clark has now become the face of college athletics. I mean, Bronny, I don't know. There hasn't been a spotlight on this guy. So putting him in a mock draft is not, you know, doing anything that hasn't been done for, I don't know, people who are doing mock drafts. So also, it's also funny when you go out there and you say, please leave my kid alone. But then you go out and you make comments like, yeah, my son is good enough right now that he could be playing in the NBA easy. What did he say? What he tweeted about his son, man, Bronny definitely better than some of these cats I've been watching on League Pass today. Shit, lightweight, hilarious. Well, you can't tweet that, LeBron, about your son who's averaging 5 points a game. Talk about he's already better. These guys are lightweight compared to your son. He can't start for his own college team. He's only averaging 5 points a game, and then you tweet this shit? Of course people are going to comment. Of course people are going to talk about it. Anything that you say, he knows this. He knows this. He can't be sitting back going, what? People actually responded to this? I don't believe this. Then there was a situation where Austin Reeves, his teammate, asked him about Bronny's game and if he was going to be starting. And LeBron said that he thought it was time that he started and loudly said, so everybody could hear it, he loudly said he could play for us right now. Easy. Easy. And I'm quite sure D'Angelo Russell kind of turned over, looked at him and said, really? Who's he going to be playing? He ain't going to be picking my spot. And I'm quite sure there were some other players who looked over to them and said, really? Your son can play for us right now? Easy? Easy? How is that? My man can't even play, can't even start, can't even get any significant time for his college team. So if his son could play for the Lakers right now, easy, easy, what did that say for Isaiah Collier? I'm quite sure he would probably be the lead scorer for the Lakers if that's the case. Easy, easy. LeBron, easy with that nonsense and that bullshit. So, hey, man, when you're speaking about, hey, y'all need to leave my son alone and this, that, and the other, let him enjoy, well, then maybe you should stop making ridiculous comments like he could be able to start or he can play for an NFL basketball team or an NBA team. Easy, easy, easy. maybe you need to slow down with that. So, man, but Georgetown basketball season is almost over. They got beat by Providence tonight. Another ugly game. Thank goodness the season's over. But here's what I will say. Here's what I'm going to say, and I've only got a couple of minutes to say this. Georgetown's on the rise. What? Georgetown's on the rise. Excuse me? Georgetown's on the rise. Man, put down the pipe. Georgetown's on the rise. What the hell have you been sniffing? Georgetown is on the rise. Let me explain. Yes, this season has stunk. Yes, this season has failed expectations, even the lowest expectations. Yes, they have failed. This team is terrible. This team is bad. But when I say better days are ahead, when I'm saying the glass is half full, I'm saying that more than just being a fan. We have put together an NIL package. We have identified players that we are going to be going after, that we have already been recruiting from the other squads in college basketball. We are on the move. We are going to be making moves. We are going to now take advantage of the situation. If you remember, and I know you don't because none of y'all give a damn about Georgetown, but I do. But you remember that Hunter Dickerson right now, who's playing for Kansas, Georgetown went after him and a couple of other players of significance. When they failed to do so because those guys looked around and said, let me see here. Do I want to go to Kansas and have a chance to play for a national championship and play in front of a full house every night? Or do I want to go to a team that stinks and is going to be playing in front of 4,000 people every day at their home games? Yeah, the decision, pretty easy. But this is what's happening. Because of that, Cooley said, you know what, fuck it. Let's go out and get garbage like Supreme Cook and all that kind of stuff. And we can save our NIL money. We'll save that NIL money and we'll move that over to the next season. So we'll have more NIL money to spend. Again, right now, Georgetown has $5 million. If you want to be highly competitive in college basketball in the NIL circle, you have to have $3 million. $3 million will be identified for teams that are winning championships, that are blue bloods. Georgetown has $5 million. Mark Fox, who I know coached at Reno, and he coached at Nevada up in Reno, and he coached at Georgia, his last stop. He's sort of like the general manager of Georgetown, because now I guess these college coaches and now these college programs have these guys who put together NILs and they're scouting and, you know, they're saying, hey, coach, watch this guy play for the university of whatever, and I think that he would be a good player, and to get him, this is what we're going to need to spend and this, that, the other. So we got Judah Mintz. We got Danny Wolf. We've identified others. There's some players that Cooley was coaching at Providence that they feel that they might be able to poach, and we've got ourselves a top 15 incoming freshman class. Now, I'm not saying that Georgetown next year is going to be vying for championships. I'm not saying that they're even going to be making the NCAA tournament, but goddamn, they're going to be a lot better than they are right now. I know that for sure. These days of getting blown out, these days of getting humiliated, these days of getting beat down, these days of getting mortified, these days of getting embarrassed on a consistent basis by these teams like Marquette and Villanova and UConn and Butler, those days are going to be over, and they're going to be over very quickly. The pendulum is starting to swing in the other direction for Georgetown basketball, and I am excited. Please, please, please get us Judah Mintz out of Syracuse and Danny Wolf out of Yale. Please. Oh, do we need them. Oh. Please. And let's hope Drew McKenna, Thomas Sorber can come in and get us better. Please, 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 please. And Coach Cooley, I trust. In Coach Cooley, I trust. All right, I'm out of here. I'm done. Want to thank everybody for listening to the program. As always, man, let's see what we can do to help each other, to be kind to each other. Again, religion, politics, all this type of stuff that divide us. Please, let's just leave this in the closet, leave it at home, and just see what we can do about treating each other with respect and dignity and kindness and compassion and empathy, regardless of your skin color, regardless of your nationality, regardless of your gender, regardless of who you love, regardless of your God or your religion, or if you have a God at all that you worship, please, let's just concentrate on being good to each other, being kind to each other, being respectful of each other, and everything else will fall into place. I promise. You've got your places where you can worship. You got your places where you can do your thing. When we're around each other, let's treat each other with the respect and dignity that we need to do. Huh? Hmm? Huh? Hmm? Wendell Wallace. Wendell's World of Sports. Gonna be a lonely man tonight, so get me out of here with some music.